Hey everyone, welcome back to the Commercial Real Estate Library podcast. We're excited to be back. We actually pre-recorded 5 episodes, which we will be releasing week after week after week with some really exciting guests. So definitely keep an eye out for that. Today we have a podcast discussion with Epic Investment Services. They have $17.5 billion in assets under active management, 30 plus million square feet of office, retail, industrial, and multifamily properties in their portfolio. So experts in asset management, experts in property management, and a whole lot of other things given their size. You guys are going to be able to take a lot from this episode. As always, before we dive in, I want to say a special thank you to our sponsor, KMB Law. KMBlaw.com. Check them out. They're the best lawyers in the business. Thanks for listening. Welcome back to the Commercial Real Estate Library podcast. You know me, Dema Tamanawala. You know my co-host, Garrett McGilvery. And today we are joined by co-CEOs Craig Coleman and Jeff Cohn of Epic Investment Services. Hey guys, thanks for being here.
Yeah, thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Yeah, great having us.
So what is Epic Investment Services? What is it that you guys do? And share a little bit about the company, if you don't mind.
Sure. I'll start, Jeff.
Sure.
There is history to kind of how we ended up where we are today. So, you know, simply speaking, Epic's fully integrated North American real estate platform. We provide property management services, asset management services, development, investment management. Property management is a key piece of our business, but our business has evolved significantly. Epic started in 2005 with one asset, and it probably operated from about 2005 to 2017 strictly as a third-party property manager. The initial founders of Epic were on the premise that independent third-party property management was a gap in the marketplace, and they started the business and they grew. One of the changes in Epic's history was 2017. I had a business called Stonecap Realty Partners, and there was another group out west called Alaska Advisors, and we merged our businesses in with Epic. And Stonecap and Alaska at that time were more institutional asset managers and provided investment management services and strategy. So that was kind of one piece to the amalgamation. And then in 2019, we merged with Jeff's company, which was MDC. Mm. MDC was geographically a different focus for us, focused mainly in Western Canada and into the US. And maybe a different client base. A lot of Jeff's clients were high net worths, private clients, and wealth managers.
So one of the original founders of Epic sat on one of my boards in a previous life and had called me in 2007 and said, you know, I'm starting this pure play management company, and would you consider being a partner in Western Canada? So we talked about it and kind of came up with a strategy, and we decided to keep, which Craig articulated, our private side of our business separate. We ran it as MDC. And then the pension fund side we ran as Epic. So we basically did that in Western Canada from 2008 right to 2019 when we merged. And all along, I kind of had a goal. And in my mind, I always envisioned that we would amalgamate the companies, because effectively we did the same things. It was just simply we did on the MDC side, it was for private investors or investment banking firms that ran family offices. And on the Epic side, it was much more institutional. It was pension fund.
Carry on from that. So where do we sit today? You know, we have about just over $17 billion of assets under management. We have about 150 employees. We've got offices from, you know, Montreal, Ottawa, Toronto, Edmonton, Calgary, Vancouver, head office in Canada is in Toronto. Our head office is in the U.S. is in Denver, and we've got some regional offices in Chicago. Of the 17, about just over, right around $2 billion in the U.S. You know, and we've pivoted a little bit in our business where we're now in the fund business, and we have a couple active funds, and we'll touch on them later, I hope. But the multifamily fund being one that is in place today, U.S. multifamily fund, and we're hoped to launch a real estate development fund this quarter. So that changes Epic a little bit from a pure service provider. And we have a co-investment strategy. So we have a balance sheet that we'll co-invest with like-minded partners, you know, so creates great alignment of interests, and I think serves us well for growth. And is interesting as we sit through COVID and people can't travel and stuff. One of the things that's different about Epic, we're not a centralized organization. We've got, again, like I touched on, you know, six offices, and we got senior people in each office. Mm-hmm. And that's actually served us amazingly well during COVID in terms of being able to do deals, people we rely on in those offices to execute and to help grow our business.
Gotcha. Just touching a bit about sort of Epic's history, how did the name Epic Investments stick through this when you have StoneCap, Alaska, and MDC? And I, neither of you guys were the CEO of Epic Investments, I assume, when these mergers were occurring.
That's a good question.
Yeah. So, well, they just, you know what, financially it was worthwhile not to fight the, ideally I would have loved the Epic, I mean, the MDC name, but you know what, Epic, from an institutional standpoint, was branded across the country. And in all honesty, like I've done this gyration a number of times. Unfortunately, from what looking at the screen, I got more gray hair than you guys. And what I found is names are interesting because it's not the name of the company, it's the people. I mean, especially in our business, it's a people business. Sure, branding's important, but you know, it's the culture and the people for your clients. And Epic, as I said, it had it nationally. In the U.S., we've left the brand MDC because we've been down in the U.S. since 2006. So they know us there, especially when we look for acquisitions. You know, and the credibility is important, real estate or any business. But so it really wasn't, I think, for me, it wasn't, it made sense to be Epic in Canada, and it's made sense to stay MDC Realty Advisors in the U.S.
Gotcha. This one's a bit, I guess, directed towards you, Craig. Why did you, because you were part of StoneCap, elect to merge with sort of like a more Canadian organization? In contrast, you could have just, obviously at $7.5 billion AUM, you had a lot of resources available to you. You could have potentially just expanded yourself.
Yeah, the business has changed a little bit in my mind at that time. Scale is important. Scale to be able to, and to Jeff had touched on it, scale with respect to attracting the brightest and the best employees is important. And by amalgamating our business at that time, gave us, you know, we were probably about 125 employees. And quite frankly, another piece of it was succession planning and to be able to allow and plan for that from our client's perspective, and I guess somewhat selfishly from my perspective as well.
Interesting. Can you talk a little bit about, like, because now you see Epic and just looking on the website, $17.5 billion under management, and you know it's this colossal company and organization. But how did you? What were some of the early wins when you talk about, you know, starting a third party management only company, or like how did you get started and get your first big projects?
Yeah. So, I mean, as I said, a lot of people have asked that, and I mean, you know, yeah, we're an overnight success in 30 years. I mean, you literally, nobody woke up one day at, you know, 20 years ago or 25 years ago, you don't expect this. You just, you do one deal, you do it well, you do another deal. And eventually, I mean, the fundamental, you know, we've developed trust and respect in the industry. And when I say trust and respect, that's from clients. You know, the best calling card of how we build our business, build our brand, is that our clients respect us and trust us. I mean, when we are making investments or managing an asset worth millions of dollars or billions of dollars, you know, we have a fiduciary duty, but if they don't trust you and respect you, they're not going to give you the business. So that's something that's just built over time. You know, I would say probably one other aspect that both Craig and I have in common is, you know, where, you know, it's, you kind of wake up a little scared every day because you got to go to work and, you know, you're making decisions, and it's the decisions you make have ramifications, not only for your employees, but for your clients and these assets. So, you know, but it's just, it's one step at a time. I certainly from my perspective, 30 years ago, if you said I'm going to be involved in running a company with a partner, then we have this much assets under management, I would say, yeah, you're crazy. It just, you know, it evolves over time.
And I'd say to Jeff's point, you know, the amalgam, you know, we all had our, each of the partners or the principals in our existing businesses had assets under management and had clients. And that amalgamation really worked well. You know, the key on the amalgamation for us was communication to our clients, so they understood what was happening. And, you know, we didn't lose any business through the transition in the process, which is I think, a important consideration. And the fact that we openly communicated and had ongoing trust with them over many years, to Jeff's point, it's years and years.
In terms of sort of where you guys are going next, you mentioned the U.S. Multifamily Fund as well as the Development Fund. Where are you guys? You guys have gone through a lot of different changes over the past, say, like 4 years as a company. Where are you guys going to be in, expecting to be in, say, 5 to 10?
You know, I think, I mean, certainly COVID has changed, I mean, impacted in terms of how we do things simply because it's we've had to focus more on the management and the kind of the crisis that exists. So from our business plan when we first met, you know, came together in May of 2019, you know, I mean, we saw this, said, okay, you know, how quick can we get to 30 billion? How quick can we get to 50 billion? And that's, you know, that's still on the radar. But there is some, you know, I think there's some choppy waters in terms of what this crisis is going to change. I mean, we're jumping ahead. There was a question, I think. But I think that the way we manage through that's going to affect our growth. But to the short answer, again, is with every crisis comes, you know, what's that saying? Never let a good crisis go to waste. So I think there's going to be tremendous opportunities. And, you know, real estate, there was a number of years where you bought a piece of property and you had cap rate compression. You didn't have to do anything. You looked like a genius. And the value of real estate went up. Well, I think those days are gone. I think you actually got to roll up your sleeves and manage the assets. You know, there's challenges in retail. There's going to be challenges in the office space. There's going to be some challenges in multifamily in various you know, versions. And then there's going to be challenges in the industrial space as well as technology involves and affects it. So with all that, the short answer is developing where our core business is and strategies, but we see a huge opportunity to be able to grow. And in particular, the U.S., you know, it's a big market and we have a platform there that we want to take advantage of.
You know, and one of our key service divisions or platforms that we offer is property management. And what we've seen through COVID is clients need strong property management more than ever. and are leaning and relying on those trusted relationships through COVID and out the other side. And I, part of our growth, I think, is potentially a significant part of our growth is what we're seeing is there's going to be opportunities for us to expand our property management business, to quite frankly take advantage of some of those opportunities that are being presented to us as maybe owners aren't as happy with the level of service or the diligence and the attention to detail that was that's been required through over the last 9 months.
Interesting. So do you see, like, I guess you guys, you're saying you see tremendous opportunity in those challenges. In terms of investment opportunities, what are you guys focusing on right now? So yeah, we briefly touched on that U.S. multifamily fund. Is that one of the areas where you see the most opportunity, and kind of, you know, why is that?
So Craig, I'll just jump in. So the multifamily fund that we started, I mean, we've been in that space since 2016 in the U.S. And what we saw when the 2007 recession hit, from 2007 to 2012, it was tough to get financing, and builders stopped building as many units as they should have to keep pace with the demand in the U.S. So our focus on our multifamily fund is it's a workforce housing. So it's not C assets, it's a B or even A assets that are employment housing for people that are working, whether it's in the industrial sector or service sector. So because construction didn't keep pace with that, the new product that started to be built from 2012 to even now is much more expensive. So we're focusing on the type of product, which is garden style apartments, wood frame, 2 to 3 story walk up, and primarily in the warmer climates in the U.S., in the West and the Southwest, and we're looking on the East Coast as well in the Southeast, is we're really focused on the assets that older product, because the people's price point in terms of what they can spend on a monthly rent, it's in that market, in that range. So consequently, when we looked at assets, and we started this thesis, as I said, in 16, it was every asset we look at is always between 95 and 98% leased. Like, even so, we just said, you know, this is a market we got to get into. And typically what we saw is this product had really not been well maintained. It was owned by individual owners and not securitized. And that's still the case. And so you can imagine the U.S. is 300 million people. It's a big place. So there is, you know, we'll run out of assets. But I mean, we'll run out of money before we run out of assets to buy. So, and our strategy is, it's very simple. And we originally had done for a family, we bought 9 buildings between 2016 and 2018, and we sold them in 2018 successfully. So we said, you know what, this plan worked. We were hitting mid to high teens on an IRR basis. So we've come back with this multifamily fund and are looking to raise capital. And we've got a great pipeline of assets. I mean, the issue we ran into, we bought our first asset March 2nd. You know, my line is, the good news is we bought our first asset. The bad news is we bought our first asset and COVID hit. So, and it's interesting, our first asset's in Las Vegas, and we projected it to be 92% occupied. We projected our income at a certain number. So far, we've been 98% occupied, and we're ahead of our business plan. We've actually been able to raise the rents in COVID with our renovation plan. And again, that speaks to the shortage of product and the demand when you have people that are that you locate in strong demographics where there's jobs.
Interesting. And do you specifically, like, you know, we have a big Canadian audience here. Do you see you guys, like, are you guys going to move into the Canadian multifamily arena, or you know, the regulatory environment in our major cities is not as conducive to good returns.
Yeah, we manage about 4,000 apartment units in Canada. We don't property manage. We outsource that, but we've got a very active asset management team. So we're in Montreal, Toronto, Edmonton, Calgary, and Vancouver. And, you know, our strategy there, at least in Canada, 4,000 units is not a lot. It's you know, at least from a property management perspective, you know, the scale is really critical in that business. And we tend to team with local partners, best-in-class operators within each of the cities to be able to execute for us. But, yeah, we're in the apartment business for our clients in Canada, and we want to continue to grow that business. It's been, you know, as I'm sure you guys know, that's a very competitive space. We're happy with our position, and you know, I guess looking to grow on it in spots. But you know, some of the markets, you know, we're in Calgary, we're in Edmonton. There's been some step backs there, but long term, prognosis on that space is quite strong.
Yeah. So just back to like the U.S. fund, though, we really see. I mean, our product is designed. It's a 3 to 5 year window where we buy the asset, we do our reconditioning, and then we look to exit. And we really feel that, you know, we can move the needle and create real NOI growth of up to 30% over those 3 to 5 years. So, I mean, we're targeting 14% plus IRRs for the investor. And these buildings will cash flow through the piece anywhere to 4 to 5%, because the way we do our renovations, we never dip below 92% occupied.
Just switching gears slightly, because you touched on this, Craig. You guys have a number of buildings in Calgary and Edmonton. This, how do you think that the cancellation of the Keystone Pipeline might affect those markets or your assets specifically?
Well, I'll touch on it. You know, Jeff's originally from Calgary, so he's got a lot of insight into that marketplace. You know, when I look at our assets within Calgary and Edmonton, you know, they're high quality assets. But, you know, we've got office, industrial, residential, and retail. But there's no doubt there's stresses there. And, you know, the Calgary marketplace on the office sites, a long-term time coming back. But, you know, it all comes down to execution. You know, we've got strong local senior people to be able to execute and drive value and lease space. And this really comes down to leasing space. In Edmonton, we're somewhat better positioned. We've got, you know, a couple high quality buildings in downtown Edmonton, a couple that we've repositioned in that marketplace. One of them that we repositioned, it was a really good buy. So our cost base on that asset is amazing, and it lets us, you know, do very attractive and aggressive lease deals. But, you know, we're looking, you know, like anybody in the office world today, you got to, even in Toronto, like we run office space in Toronto. You guys know the office market in Toronto. You know, in terms of what's happening today, you got to be flexible. You know, the relationship with the used to be the landlord tenant, you know, I think it's much more of a partnership today. So you're working together, you're offering flexible lease terms, you're looking for creativity on the lease terms, and that lets us do deals. But, you know, we're not hiding from the fact Calgary and Edmonton are, you know, Alberta's a tough go, but we've got a longstanding team in place and long history there to operate. Jeff's probably got a little more insight into the economy.
Yeah, I would say that, to be honest with you, I mean, we do this all the time, because as Craig mentioned, we have a number of in particular office buildings that we manage. So we talk to CEOs, try and get the pulse. And most of the oil and gas CEOs have said, like, we're not letting people go anymore. I mean, if we'd done this interview 6 months ago, guys would be worried about their jobs. For the most part, the people that have jobs in the oil and gas business today in Alberta, they're not going to lose their jobs anymore. Those cuts have been made. So in the, I think you're going to see stabilization. And I don't think this wasn't a surprise. I mean, it was more a political statement. I mean, it was an easy win for the US president. And obviously, you know, the premier's got to come out upset and concerned, but they're still flowing, you know, so now they're going to be trucking the oil down to the Gulf. you know, or it's going to be going on one of the slower lines. It was symbolic.
So, okay. So we've kind of touched a little bit on this, but just quickly, are there any new real estate trends that you guys are looking to capitalize on as a company?
Well, we don't know if we want to tell you that because then other guys will come.
we'll delay the release of this podcast.
Yeah. I you know what? I mean, Craig's may have some different thoughts. COVID, you know, it was a disruptor. COVID is like putting gasoline on a fire with respect to e-commerce for retail. I mean, it just accelerated what's happened. So on the retail, and we manage a large retail portfolio, in particular in Toronto. Craig's got a big team there that deals with the assets out there. But, you know, there is opportunity because there's going to be change. And we've got to work with our clients to come up with new ways to ensure that these assets are going to be viable. You know, I don't believe retail's going away. I think and we've got to create different environment for people to want to come back. But I think there's huge opportunities. Am I going to tell you specifically what we're working on? No. But there definitely is opportunities in that space, no different than with office. You know, will we have to reconfigure office to accommodate the office worker? I think so. At the end of the day, we're still working on that plan, what it's going to look like. Industrial, we're bullish on. It's going to continue. Where the opportunities will be, I think, is that I think there's some weak balance sheet companies. May not be bad real estate, but the companies have run into trouble because of COVID and rent collections, and that's where there'll be some opportunities to buy properties. But you're going to have to be quick and agile.
You know, and I'll just add to it. I guess more from I guess our operating side of the business. You know, Jeff talked a lot on the investments, but you know, we continue to want to expand and use technology and data, you know, to make informed decisions. So whether that's around investments, whether that's understanding our tenants better. Those are big drivers, and it's quite frankly, it's a continued importance of ESG, right? Quite frankly, you know, it was started and driven by the large companies and large pension funds, and I do think it's going to be important to the smaller investors. For a couple of different reasons. One, it the efficiencies. But the other side of it is, I think liquidity. I think purchasers are going to demand it, and then certain buildings don't have certain ESG characteristics, they may stay away, and lenders are going to start to gravitate towards assets that have ESG qualities. Now, look, they're not all you know 2 million square foot office buildings, but there's ESG light programs that you can install and instill in the appropriate assets. So. You know, if we look in trends to capitalize on, those are a couple from our operational perspective. And, you know, from a maybe macro perspective, you know, I still believe in urbanization. Like everybody's talking about moving out of Toronto and moving out of Vancouver and moving out of Montreal. I'm still a big believer in the cities. It's going to be a little bit different. But what made the cities great 14 months ago, I don't know. I don't know if it's really changed. And the one thing that I've noticed as I've talked to our staff or other staff, as we're now in the second lockdown, I think the first lockdown, people could work from home and they got through it and it was okay. The more people I'm talking to in the second lockdown hate it and can't wait to get back to socializing and back to the office. And, you know, that's one. 8 months different from the first and second lockdown. I think there's a lot of frustration out there of people being, you know, work from home. Technically, does it work? Of course, but I don't think it's a long-term solution.
Yeah,
Damon can speak from experience.
Well, I was going to say Damon's sitting in his office. You know, you know.
Yeah. You know, I also do think. I mean, we were talking to. Zev Mandelbaum from Altree, and one of the things he was saying was you know, there are some long-term ramifications when you talk about deal flow. And just, you know, a lot of us, probably all of us on this call, are guys who are out at events talking with tons of people, and that might be what makes us good at our jobs, and that's something we can't do. So I don't know if it's happening now or in the future, and you know, things are finding a way to move along. I'm in the apartment world, so things are moving along still, but yeah, I think there are some effects that maybe are harder to see. So this is a good one for you guys. You guys are so heavily diversified and in so many, you know, across North America and so many different markets and verticals. If you had $5 million of equity, what would you buy and why? Now that might be, you might actually have $5 million. So there you go. You can, I'm sure you that's a very real thing for you guys, but you know, I always think that's easy to bring it down to the small scale of, you know, what's something that's piquing your interest right now?
Well, you know, first of all, I'd ask, is that your last 5 million or is there another five? I mean, it's the interesting thing is, I mean, there's when we pitch and I'll use the analogy on our private side with our high net worth private investors. You know, we go make a presentation, we talk about, I use baseball vernacular, singles, doubles and triples. So for the most part, we've grown our business as singles. So we say, look, we're going to show you a 5 to 7% return. And if we hit that 12 or 15 or 20% return, which is a single, I mean, a double or a triple or a home run. But if you're not comfortable with a single, don't invest with us. I mean, and over our career, I've seen with 5 million, for the most part, we've hit doubles or triples, but we usually go in as a single. So it depends your risk tolerance. I mean, if that's your only 5 million, I would be a lot more careful with what we're investing in. So that's why I'm not giving you a straight answer, because it's you know, if, like, I'll use the example right now, there's a disconnect. Nobody wants to invest in Alberta. So if you want to make, if you say, well, I want to have the maximum cash flow return possible, I want to invest in Canada, and I have a risk tolerance, you should be taking a look at some assets in Alberta to buy. Like, I can buy the same building, I can buy an industrial building in Alberta for anywhere from 10 to 20% cheaper than I can in Vancouver or Toronto or Montreal.
Now, I
can go one step farther. I can find you a deal in the U.S. that doesn't exist in Canada, but you got cross-border risk, you got, you know, you got a different country, you got currency risk, but I can tell you, there's deals there that you have and you guys are in the real estate space, we see product all day long, because we're exposed to it in the U.S. that you will not see in Canada for 10 years. So it's your risk tolerance. Sorry, I just can't. Okay. But if you do have 5 million, you should definitely give it to us to invest.
Okay. All right. Greg, do you have?
I'll share some thoughts. You know, I've cut my teeth and spent a lot of time in the apartment space. You know, I still gravitate back to that. You got to be patient. You got to pick your spots. But I still like the apartment space. And, you know, one thing we're looking at is some mid-rise infill within the city. So that's new build, new development, boutique type of assets, you know, maybe 15 units, wood frame construction, but built-in communities, or, you know, Toronto, built in the neighborhoods, so in the beaches, in the Junction, maybe in Roncesvalles. But there's a template that goes with it. Construction execution is important, and it's something the cities are looking for, in the city of Toronto specifically. So I actually like that opportunity. We're looking at that with the group right now, actually.
Okay. That's, I love it. So you guys actually did give some fantastic insights and answers there. I hope you didn't reveal too many of the secrets, but
no.
Well, thank you so much, guys. We really appreciate you being on here. You know, obviously, you know, again, an incredibly diverse and successful company. You know, when I get my 5 million, you guys can have it. And
you know? Well, what do you got? We'll take whatever you got right now. Remember, you didn't pay attention. Baby steps. We'll take a couple $100,000 from each year right now and just get
you. Okay. All right. Let me just turn the camera off so I can give you my banking info.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough.
Okay. But thank you so much, guys. And yeah, I know people are going to get a lot from this podcast. So thank you.
Oh, thank you, guys.
Thanks for your time.